began last Saturday. The Latin American church hall in Corcoran. The fast was technically broken last night as participants took communion from a farm workers union priest. The well-known farm workers organizer Cesar Chavez made an appearance at the gathering to bolster the efforts of the pastors. There were cheers, and Chavez, first in Spanish, then in English, commended the hunger strikers.
I move in testifying to this by display of character, the resolution of faith and spirit moving among you, the vigil at the courthouse in Hanford, and then your fast now is proof, indisputable proof that you are willing to pay the price. We're willing to pay the price to bring about social justice to this city, to this perfect valley.
The Kern County Sheriff's Department says six tablets of LSD were discovered in the first major battle as three Coachella Valley table growers have recognized his union. The Farm Workers Organizing Committee and have signed or agreed to sign working contracts. In Los Angeles, Chavez had some comments in a report from newsman Larry Badger.
We think that this is a very important day for the farm workers and the union. Especially important because some people have charged for the last 5 years that the union does not want contracts. And I think today we're going to disprove that. We're also being charged with being ruthless and willing to ruin the industry. And I think that we're disproving that here today. We have signed what we consider to be a reasonable contract. We have accepted wage levels lower than other contracts. This is a first contract situation.
From this point on, all grapes grown at farms with a contract with the farm workers will show this union label, a symbolic outgrowth of today's signing. The three-year contract provides for a minimum wage of $1.75 an hour, a 6% an hour increase, or 10 cents an hour, whichever is larger, plus money paid in by the growers for a health and welfare fund. Larry Badger, ABC News, Los Angeles.
President Nixon today offered strong support for Supreme Court projects.
Californians, on colleges and universities throughout the nation, emotions are running high. 180 campuses are already facing violence and disruption triggered by the tragedy at an Ohio school. I have therefore called President Charles Rich of the University of California and Chancellor Glenn Dunphy of our state colleges and have asked them to close all the state universities and colleges tomorrow, Thursday, and Friday, and of course Saturday and Sunday. I have also by wire asked the private colleges and universities and the community colleges in California to consider doing the same thing. I'm grateful to the California Broadcast Pool for making it possible to come before you to explain why this unprecedented action is necessary. The time has come for responsible citizens of all political persuasions at all ages to pause long enough to take inventory. The area of immediate concern is the academic community, but what is happening there is happening to all of us. Over a period of more than 5 years, we have seen marches, demonstrations, and sit-ins escalate and lead to vandalism, window breaking, and eventually bombings and arson, and inevitably to death. As dissent became disordered beyond the ability of campus police to control, local and state enforcement agencies were called upon. Those who deal in violence seized upon this, even this, as a cause for more violence, blaming the authorities for the escalation. They know better. Indeed, they know that in most cases, their violence was instigated for the very purpose of causing confrontation with the law and hopefully to bring about injury to non-involved students so as to cause the radicalization of the moderates. And they've been successful. In our state, a half dozen have died from bomb and gun. Others have been maimed and blinded. And so it was in Ohio. And four young people are dead. It's possible they weren't even participants in the trouble. But death isn't very selective when the violence of a mob is confronted by the force necessary to contain it. I suggest that those across our land and here in our state who would use this tragedy in Ohio to further their own cause, whether it be disagreement with national policy or hatred for the establishment, are contemptible in their hypocrisy. I realize there's little to be gained by appealing to the hardcore who are capable of such hypocrisy, so my words are directed to you, the great majority of students and faculty who believe there's a better way. I know you too have grievances, perhaps with the university or college, or with the shortcomings you see in our society. Many of you find the war repugnant, and as a result are inclined to listen to those who advocate violence in the name of peace. It's because of this, and because you're our best hope for restoring the kind of atmosphere in which we can meet and find solutions to these problems, that I've asked the universities and state colleges be closed. Go to your homes. Take the next 4 days to review all that's happened. See if there isn't a better way than going on with the torch and the club, until as surely as the sun rises, there are more Kent universities, probably in California. Whatever happens in the rest of the nation, let us here in California have a pause in the rallies and the noise of the bullhorns. Let's take these 4 days to review both our aspirations and our responsibilities. We can have a new beginning. Monday can be the first day of the new time, a time of dissent without disorder, of dialogue and discussion without destruction, of an honest, non-violent search for answers and solutions. The pursuit of education is a personal value which not only permits a student to improve his knowledge, but also permits him or her an opportunity to improve society for the knowledge gained. A student has a responsibility to his fellow students in order to protect the rights of all to this opportunity for an education, and we all have an obligation and duty to support a nation whose goals and objectives are set by centuries of effort, tradition, and culture. And yet at the same time, we want to see that tradition doesn't become a stultifying adherence to the past and a rejection of proper change. Faculties, too, have a grave obligation. No single class of people has such opportunities. The wisdom which faculties possess are the treasury of a society. The ability to transmit this wisdom is the art of ages. The failure to lead the inquiring, hungry minds of students in the pursuit of knowledge and truth is the supreme crime of an age and the loss of a generation. It's time faculties ascended again to their role of helping maturing minds to achieve their ultimate goals. Administrators are those charged with the fateful role of ensuring that the freedom of students and faculty to interrelate takes place. Let's all assess our roles and return Monday, May 11th, determined to make academic freedom a meaningful thing and not a cloak to serve those who would destroy it even while they use it. During this period of reflection, I would hope that you who are parents would have an opportunity to exchange views with your sons and daughters, and to express the hope that they'll have faith in those endeavoring to lead man to a better way of life, and to reject those who are seeking to divide, to deny, and to destroy. Now, I want to make it very plain that closing the campuses for this 4-day period is not in any way giving in to those who preach and practice violence. As a matter of fact, this 4-day period is support for those who believe in nonviolence. Lest there be any who would misread the meaning and purpose of this 4-day period, let me assure you that any resort to violence or destruction, any illegal individual or mob action, will be dealt with firmly and immediately. Surely it should be obvious by now that this state has the collective law enforcement strength to deal with such disturbances. And those who engage in such acts will not be able to fade away into the crowds of curious. They'll not be able to hide behind the innocent. I believe the time has come for the academic community, students and faculty, to at last admit that whatever grievances, whatever legitimate complaints they've had with regard to the university, its purposes, goals, or functions, they are in no way related to the cause of the real radicals. I realize there are limitations on the capacity of the university administrators with regard to identifying participants on the larger campuses and thus being able to utilize swift and certain punishment. The missing factor in this equation is to be found among the great majority of students and faculty members. The time has come for them to make some decisions. Namely, that a number of duly authorized campus organizations, consistent instigators of the violence, and participants in that violence should no longer be entitled to campus recognition or acceptance. The students and faculty repudiate those who have brought violence to the campus and the community, and take every step possible to separate themselves from those individuals and groups. Then, shouldn't you students and faculty members review your policy with regard to campus speakers who have no truly educational value, but who are invited on some unfounded assumption that to refuse to hear them is in some way a denial of free speech? Haven't many of these speakers demeaned and degraded the university? Then, if the university is indeed engaged in a search for truth, isn't it time to have a real review and critique of all that's taken place in the name of protest, to determine once and for all the true nature of these several years of disorder, and whether there was not indeed a pattern and a meaning beyond just the first assumption that this was youthful ferment or an expression of youthful idealism? Have the causes for which the protesters marched been truly the causes they pronounced? Or did they march simply in the name of disruption, borrowing causes as justification for their violence? Hasn't the time come, in a real atmosphere of academic freedom and the spirit of goodwill, when administrators, educators, students, the public, and government can find the answers to the problems of impersonality in the university, proper support of education, the goals of education, and the business of improving the process of learning? I make these only as suggestions, as some of the things that have not been done and perhaps could be done. There are matters properly to be settled by you within the academic community. I will simply say, from my position, there must be an end to the violent disruption of the campus, and the end must begin now. I know these are troubled times. I know many of us are anxious about the future, about the economic situation, about Vietnam, about the problems with the campus. In the stillness of the night, I'm sure that many of us ask ourselves upon occasion, what's happened? What's gone wrong? We do have problems, and it's important that we face them with candor and frankness. But it's also important that we face them with faith, and with the knowledge that we have the strength within ourselves and among ourselves to solve them. This nation has had problems before. We've met them. The American system has prevailed. That system works. It's working now. There is no need for despair or fear. What's needed now is clarity of reason, common sense, and the power of prayer. Several weeks ago, this state, this nation, was united in an outpouring of faith and prayer that the crew of Apollo 13 be returned safely to Earth. For 4 days, we were one. One with the men in that tiny craft, and one with each other. If in these 4 days ahead, we would embark on the same oneness, if we would use that same power of prayer and put some faith to work, faith in each other, in ourselves, and in our nation, we can continue this American journey in brightness and hope, with courage and promise. During a dinner at Mount Vernon, years ago, and he said that Lafayette turned to his host, General Washington, and said, "General, you Americans, even in war and desperate times, have a superb spirit. You're happy and you're confident. Why is it?" Washington, it said, was quiet for a moment, and then he replied, "There's freedom. There's space for a man to be alone and think, and there are friends who owe each other nothing but affection." Well, all of this is still true in this land, especially so in California. We've accomplished so much, and yet we have no time to be idle and misdirected, because we all know there's so much still to be done, such a bright future to be won. Whatever the name for it, man has always had a dream of Camelot, that mythical place of truth and justice and brotherhood, where all men live in peace. No one's ever come closer to the realization of that dream than we have here in this land. For 200 years, our national purpose has been to defend and enhance every man's right to chart his own way, to follow his own star. Now, it's true that you and I, all of us, have fallen short at times and failed that dream. But if we look closely, we find the dream has never failed us. It's always been there. This is Camelot, man's last and best chance to make the myth a reality. But Camelot can be lost if we fail even for an instant in time. to remember that the lasting values, the treasures of true worth, the things to be preserved and handed on to our children, are the things for which men have always been willing to give their all. Camelots are not built by shouting slogans or holding sit-ins or expressing hatred for some mysterious they whom we can blame for whatever cause we're protesting. Camelots are made by building schools and hospitals, fighting smog, moving water, building roads, by giving every man his right to dream and be whatever his manhood can make him. Camelots are made by having common courtesy as well as compassion for each other, by realizing sometimes when we're arguing with someone stupid that he may be doing the same thing. All of this I know sounds mundane and not as exciting as a riot, but actually it's where the action is. If you of the now generation are very much needed in that action, we need your strength, we need your youth, and yes, we need your idealism. We need that to put some luster back in our own dreams. You should discover, or perhaps rediscover something about us, about our generation. We who left so many of our best on the fields of World War II. You're not the first to love peace. We love peace. Perhaps together we can find it.
His fellow cabinet members and his pleadings for a more sympathetic attitude at the White House toward its critics. High-level sources report that among those who have advised a softening of the so-called Agnew-Mitchell syndrome are HEW Secretary Robert Finch, Housing Secretary George Romney, Secretary of Labor George Shultz, and Commerce Secretary Maurice Vance. None of these cabinet members, we're told, are thinking of submitting a resignation, and none of them really feel that Mr. Nixon's alienation of the youth is beyond salvage. They do, however, feel a mutual frustration with some of the more moderate youthful protesters, having little individual access to the president, little opportunity to influence White House policy and thinking. This restless discontent with White House policy today led to one angry resignation at HEW's Office of Education. ABC Sam Donaldson has that story.
HEW Secretary Finch's day began with the resignation of 25-year-old Anthony Moffitt, the director of the Office of Student and Youth Affairs, who complained that the Nixon administration is not listening to what youth is trying to tell it.
The president has demonstrated that he does not understand young people, and that he does not wish to communicate with them. And students across the country are saying enough, enough to his short-sighted policy. I support their nonviolent protest and can no longer continue to serve in an administration which seeks to discredit it.
Secretary Finch, you call Moffitt's criticisms unjustified, met later with a group of faculty and students from Stanford University. It was a closed session. They reportedly complained about the war and the administration's attitude toward dissent. And Finch came away convinced the campus revolt, sparked by the Cambodian attack, was broad-based.
This is not simply a case, in my opinion, of a few militants, as a small percentage of the student body, as it, say, was a year ago.
Isn't this a national crisis now?
It is a national crisis, but and that's why the governors have been invited to come in by the president. But the apparatus through which you deal with are the state and local government and local school boards. And by the stroke of a pen or anything else, I would be the first to say that there should not be a federal presence or a federal reaction.
Other students were meeting today with members of Congress. A report from ABC congressional correspondent Bob Clark.
This confrontation between students and senators reflects a concern in Congress over the deepening chasm between the nation's leaders and the nation's young. The idea here today was to start a dialogue that would help bridge that chasm, but it sounded at times more like a political rally.
Despite what may be said elsewhere by officials in another branch of this government, in the capital of the United States, the opportunity to dissent will be given full hearing, keeping with the traditional heritage of freedom and free speech in this country.
I've virtually given up on any faith in the effectiveness of speeches and resolutions directed at the White House. But I have not given up on what it is possible to accomplish under our constitutional system if we'll start using the Constitution.
You can change the government and make it responsible to the people, and you can also change the processes of politics so as to make political parties and political processes also responsive to the will and judgment of the people. So there's no limit really to the challenge which lies before you, and do not be deterred by either Al Capp or Spiro Agnew or Richard Nixon. Thank you.
We have a late film story just in from ABC on today's disturbances in the University of Wisconsin campus at Madison. ABC's Kenneth Gale has the story of this report just recorded from the network.
Again today, both sides on the Wisconsin campus stopped just short of head-cracking violence as they have all week long. Some of the steam was gone from the demonstration today. The word is there may be heavier trouble tomorrow in reaction to funerals for students killed at Kent State. County and Sheriff's Police stayed in the forefront today, but National Guardsmen with live ammunition were close by. The student enthusiasm fell off some today, may have been in part because of the heavy dousings of tear and pepper gas they got last night. Wherever police and National Guardsmen saw even the slightest hint of trouble, they saturated the spot with gas. There were a couple of minor fires, this one a wooden barricade in the road, quickly cleared up by National Guardsmen. In the last 4 days, there have been isolated but minor firebombings, including the home of the university's president emeritus. A helicopter with a huge searchlight spotlighted trouble spots during the night, but out again today. Police and guardsmen on the ground managed things without too much effort. The situation is by no means defused here at the University of Wisconsin yet. School authorities say they have no intention of giving in to any of the student demands, the main one being to close the school down in a gesture of warning for a Kent State victim. Kenneth Gale, ABC News, University of Wisconsin.
While a lot of students went to Washington today to protest to the president, those in New York City had a confrontation with police. And here's a picture report on that.
Several hundred college and high school students declared a war of destruction in New York City today. They were protesting the killing of four Kent State University students by National Guardsmen. They also said there could be no business as usual while the undeclared war in Indochina rages on. The demonstrators gathered on Wall Street and marched nearly 2 miles to Union Square, where they sat down and blocked traffic in all directions. They expected a police action and chanted peace slogans until it came. After the first hour, police tried unsuccessfully to persuade the demonstrators to leave. After the second hour, police moved in with clubs swinging. The students reacted with rocks and bottles. In a matter of minutes, the square was cleared, and there was business as usual. But not for long, by the students. Their plans are for even more massive disruptions in the very near future. This is Jim Giggins, ABC News, New York.
In other national news, two former Army lieutenants detailed today what they called war crimes by American units in South Vietnam. Larry Rotman of Massachusetts and Michael Yule of New York City say they were witness to saturation bombing of civilian villages, mutilation of enemy troops, and torture of prisoners. Rotman even said his unit struck into Cambodia 2 years ago. The launch of the Apollo 14 moon landing mission, scheduled for October 1st, is going to be delayed at least 2 months.
On the shutdown UCLA campus, signs of the student strike are numerous, but students are few. Like all the other state-run universities and colleges, there will be no classes or official activities until Monday morning. Even a non-strike rally was canceled. Inside the student union, about 125 strikers are camping, pledging not to return to classes until all U.S. troops are pulled out of Indochina. A communications desk was set up to get word of strike activities to students. And a medical corps is being trained to give aid in the clashes these students obviously expect to come. The schools are closed now, and these students are hoping to keep them closed long after Monday. Mike Lawrence, ABC News, Los Angeles.
We'll have a report on the local college situation in just a moment. College, you're all closed down until Monday. Colin Doherty has a summary of the situation beginning with Fresno State.
Fresno State College, along with the other 18 California State Colleges and 9 universities, closed its doors today and will remain closed until Monday. The reason for the closure is an order given by Governor Ronald Reagan to allow the students and their parents a few days to cool off and talk things out after nearly a week of demonstrating and destruction of the state schools. This area in front of the Student Union building is the hub of activity on the Fresno campus. Now except for a few students taking advantage of the extreme quiet, it is deserted. At a news conference this morning, the outgoing and the incoming student body presidents expressed their opinions about the closure and the upcoming student strike.
Yesterday, the student senate of Fresno State College, the duly elected representative body of the students, voted to support a student strike on our campus. As student body president, I am in total agreement with this action. I strongly urge all Fresno State students who are concerned with the events of the past few days to participate in this strike. It should be clearly understood that this strike is intended to be a nonviolent expression of the students' dissatisfaction with the events in both Southeast Asia and at Kent State University.
Fresno State College will remain closed until Monday, at which time students will return to a voluntary strike. We believe that severity of the local, state, and national situation requires the consideration and interest of all students. While at the same time, it is essential that students are well informed. As student leaders, we plan to fulfill that role. During the next several days, we are offering our time to Fresno media in order to create a better understanding as to what is happening, what effects it will have, and where it may lead us.
Later today, KJO newsman Roy Daly was at a news conference called by the Student Coalition.
This strike is in opposition to President Nixon's decision to extend American imperialism into Cambodia and Laos. This strike is in solidarity with our brothers and sisters who are striking from Stanford to Boston. This strike is in support of the strikes which have been called for Fresno City and Fresno State College, which are to last until the end of the war. This strike is in protest to the murder of 4 Kent State students by what Senator Young of Ohio described as trigger-happy guardsmen. We realize that this kind of repression must stop. We realize that the students are hip to Governor Reagan, who is now telling us to be nonviolent after he called for a bloodbath.
At noon today, Fresno City College officials, after a morning of false fire alarms and bomb scare, closed its doors until Monday. Wrigley College will close tomorrow. All campus activity on both the Fresno schools has been postponed.